Hey, this is Peter Ott. Just a quick note before we get started. Have a great interview here today with Nathaniel Groh from Fangraphs. We did have some audio problems, so I apologize that the audio quality isn't quite what you come to expect from the Sports Lobby's podcast, but the interview's great, so hopefully you enjoy it. Thanks. Welcome to the Sports Lobby's podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz podcast. I'm here today with Nathaniel Groh, an associate professor of legal studies at the University of Georgia's Terry College of Business. Additionally, he's the author of Baseball on Trial, The Origin of Baseball's Antitrust Exemption, as well as a number of sports-related law review articles. He also analyzes sports law issues for the website's Fangraphs. I'm glad to have you here with us today, Nathaniel.
Well, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
To start off, is there anything else that we should know about you? Anything so we could better get to know you?
I think that's probably a lot of it. So I'm, you know, a lifelong baseball fan. That's been kind of my specialty area of focus within the sports law universe. Although obviously I, you know, pay attention to the goings-ons in the NFL and, you know, NCAA and all that. It's, you know, hot right now. So, you know, a lot on baseball's antitrust exemption and just all the different legal issues going on in MLB, which I think sometimes might get lost a little bit in the shuffle. The NFL's been in court lately, and with all the daily fantasy sports stuff, people kind of overlook what's going on in baseball. There's a lot of interesting issues there as well, in my opinion.
Right. And it seems like people have an interest in this, right? I mean, you write for a website that analyzes statistics and things like that, but people go there to read about sports law too. I mean, do you find that even non-lawyers and stuff are interested in these kind of issues?
Yeah, I think so. Fangraphs, for those listeners who aren't familiar, is basically, like you said, a baseball kind of sabermetrically oriented website. They've got a lot of, you know, just stats available and then a lot of analysis and stuff. So, you know, it's a fun place for me to write because I always liked reading the website even before I started writing there. And they've kind of had a history of having, in addition to, you know, analyzing what's going on in the field and off the field in terms of, you know, player transactions, they've also kind of had a history of focusing on the business and legal side of the sport. So I think it's a good, you know, anybody who goes there, you'll see basically everything from analyzing a pitcher's, you know, delivery to what's the latest, you know, statistical, you know, what's the latest new stat that's developed, talking about the latest lawsuit.
Well, great. Yeah. You're one of the premier baseball legal analysts out there, I think. You know, I think that's safe to say, and especially when it comes to the written analysis. So again, we're glad to have you here today. Let's talk about an article that you recently wrote for Fangraphs. It was published on April 13th, 2016. It's entitled MLB Scores Important Victory in Fan Safety Lawsuit. So I just went to a baseball game yesterday. We saw a number of balls leave the field of play and actually kind of started a conversation with the people that I was with. And they're asking, what happens, you know, if somebody gets hit in the head? And then we were all kind of looking up on Twitter. There was earlier, I think this season, there was a bat flew into the stands and a father reached out and stopped it from hitting his texting son's face and stuff like that. And people are aware of this, but I don't think people know what happens in those cases. So that's kind of the gist of what your article's about.
Yeah, I think there was even one the other day in Tampa where lady who was sitting behind the netting behind home plate that somehow a ball hit a hole in it and drilled her in the head, and she had to, yeah, I think she's in the hospital. So this sort of thing seems to happen all the time. The article that I wrote most recently was dealing with this lawsuit, this fan safety class action lawsuit that was filed against MLB last year, Payne, P-A-Y-N-E, kind of ironic name, versus Office of the Commissioner of Baseball. And basically this fan sued all 30 MLB teams in the aftermath of a bunch of the high profile incidents last year when bats and balls were flying into the stands. In particular, there's the one in Fenway where the woman got drilled with a broken bat and had to go to the emergency room, was like in critical condition for a few days and whatnot. And so the lawsuit tries to basically force MLB to change its fan safety protocols. And it says that fans don't realize how much danger they're in, that today MLB is doing a lot to try to even basically encouraging them to get distracted, you know, with respect to, you know, programs on cell phones, you know, using apps within the stadium and what, you know, offering Wi-Fi and whatnot. And so the lawsuit basically asked for injunctive relief with the court asking the court to force MLB to install foul pole netting in all 30 stadiums. So basically from behind home plate all the way down to the foul poles, eject anybody sitting along the baselines.
Okay, so that's a pretty drastic change from the way baseball's been experienced for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Huge difference, right?
Yeah, I mean, it changes the experience, I think a lot, you know. It just even players, you know, throwing balls up to the kids in the stands or something, that would be impossible with a net there, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think the initial reaction to it, from what I've seen and kind of witnessed, seems like people fall into two camps. You know, one is, I don't want any more netting. When I go to a game, I want to be able to try to catch foul balls. You know, I think some of those people might not fully realize or appreciate, like, how little reaction time there may be in a case of a liner that's hit right at them. But, you know, some people are much more, you know, free will and let me, you know, do what I want and no more nanny state, you know, just let me be. And I don't, you know, I want to be able to try to catch balls. Because, you know, some people are saying, yeah, maybe we need to go a little bit further with the netting, you know, just only around home plate might not be enough. But then I think I haven't really heard anybody other than these attorneys who really think the foul pole is necessary. But ultimately, it doesn't look like they're going to get their wishes, the attorneys, because last week, or I guess a week and a half ago now, the federal judge out in California dismissed 25 of the 30 MLBs from the lawsuits. Said that any team not in California where the lawsuit was filed, that the court lacks personal jurisdiction over them. So everybody but five California-based franchises. And so right now, the suit stands with just the Oakland A's, San Francisco Giants, LA Dodgers, Anaheim Angels, or I guess Los Angeles Angels, and San Diego Padres remain in the case.
Okay. So most of these have been tossed out. It looks like the cases will probably proceed in California. Who is bringing these lawsuits? You said it's a class action suits. I think most people hear class action, they think millions of people. I don't think millions of people have been hit by baseballs or bats. And so who exactly is even bringing these lawsuits?
Good question. So the original plaintiff was this woman, Gail Payne, who I guess is an Oakland A's season ticket holder. And the funny thing is she sits like way up. It's not even like she's like right behind the dugout, you know, where she's at the highest degree of risk. She's like up in like an upper level box section, I think, kind of down the first baseline. But she was the first plaintiff to step up. It was the named plaintiff in the case. And baseball MLB's attorneys originally pointed out that, well, the problem is she doesn't really have any standing to sue because she's never actually been hit by a foul ball. And so the plaintiff's attorneys, a firm up in, I think based out of Seattle, if I remember right, dredged up a couple other plaintiffs. One of them is a professor down somewhere over in South Carolina, and he actually is the author of a book called Death at the Ballpark, which analyzes all of the deaths during baseball games over the last 150 years in terms of amateur, professional, etc. So obviously somebody who's kind of into the topic anyway, and then also somebody who actually had been hit in an LA Dodgers game. So they're the three named plaintiffs right now. MLB still arguing that they all kind of lack standing, either because two of them still have never been hit by a foul ball at a major league game, and the third plaintiff, the one who has, hasn't indicated she has any plans to ever go to another game in the future. Baseball's arguments basically, you know, look, even for these five California franchises, any harm here is totally speculative. All future harm for this injunction to be based on is really, really speculative. The stats show that, you know, it's extremely unlikely that any one fan in one seat is likely to be hit by a ball, let alone severely injured during the course of a game or a season. And so they are trying to still get this kicked out at the motion to dismiss level, and the court just recently allowed the plaintiffs to do a little bit more jurisdictional discovery to try to pinpoint what exactly is the risk that a single fan sitting in a single seat faces at a major league game, so that the judge can better determine, you know, how speculative is the injury here.
Right. And I mean, in the first year of law school, I remember, you know, learning that basically you kind of assume the risk by going to a baseball game. You know that it's possible that balls or whatever can fly into the stand. And so it's kind of a bad lawsuit to bring. I guess what these lawyers are trying to say is that it's different now because, like you said, they encourage people to be distracted and not paying attention to the game. Is that how this case differs from past cases?
I think so. Yeah. So you're exactly right, right? So there's this thing called the baseball rule. And interestingly, the judge hasn't even gotten into this issue yet at all, is, you know, even assuming that the plaintiffs have standing to sue, you know, is MLB even potentially liable here? And MLB's argued so far that they're not, that fans assume the risk of injury and that as long as they have netting basically just behind home plate in the most dangerous seating areas, that that's all that they're legally required to do. If you look at the complaint, it's kind of a crazy looking complaint. They have a bunch of photos in there of fans who've been injured, and they try to catalog all the various incidents in which fans have been hit by foul balls over the last, you know, 5 or so years. And I think what they're really trying to emphasize to the court is, even if there's this traditional rule of assumption of risk, that the fans assume the risk of injury, as they call the concept, that the game's changed a lot. Pitchers are throwing faster, the batters are hitting the ball faster, seats are closer to the field. There's a lot more going on to distract fans, scoreboards, you know, cell phones, etc. And I think that they're trying to, if they can get through to actually being able to litigate on the merits, they're hoping to be able to convince the court here that the circumstances have changed so much that it's not appropriate to hold fans accountable for their own injuries anymore, and that, you know, maybe major league teams need to be more legally responsible.
Okay, so where we stand right now, it looks like most of the cases have been tossed out everywhere except for California, and the California cases still have jurisdictional issues. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So the suit's out in California. The five California teams are the only real defendants left. And now the question is just, before the plaintiffs can move on, they've got to be able to convince the judge later this year in August, I think the hearing's scheduled for, whether there's actually standing there, how speculative or how concrete is this risk of future injury for these plaintiffs.
Okay. And you seem to think that it's pretty speculative and likely to get tossed out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they come up with. They're allowed to get some data from MLB on, like, where these balls go and, you know, how many fans are hurt and all that. And Bloomberg actually did a study. Somebody, one of the reporters over there, did a study. I think it's based on 3 MLB parks. They used FOIA requests to get injury data for 3 publicly owned stadiums. And based on that, they extrapolated that there's something like 1,470 fans injured per year at major league games by foul balls and broken bats. Which on the one hand is a lot, but on the other hand, when you think about, you know, 80 million people or so attend baseball games every year, the numbers are pretty small. So it'll be interesting to see how how strong a case the plaintiffs build. But my intuition is that, most fans go an entire lifetime without ever coming close to getting a foul ball. So my sense is that the judge is probably likely to say it's a pretty remote threat of injury here, but you never know what they'll be able to show.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would be interesting. I don't know if that data will ever be public, but to see where the balls tend to go and stuff. Because, yeah, I've gone to 5 to 10 baseball games a year for a long time, and I've never come anywhere close to a foul ball. So maybe I could use that data to increase my chances or something.
Yeah, there was the one guy at the Tigers game. Did you see the guy at the Tigers game like a week ago who caught 5 in one day?
Right, yeah. No, some people just have the stars align or something.
Exactly.
So, okay. Looks like this probably won't go anywhere. It's interesting to talk about, at least. And then if they can get past the jurisdictional issues, to see what the court thinks about this changed world of baseball that the plaintiffs are saying exists.
Yeah, the one other thing I think, just kind of to flesh it all out a little bit, or to complete the circle here, is that one aspect here is that MLB last November, if I remember right, sometime over this past offseason, issued a non-mandatory, basically a recommendation to its teams on increasing the amount of netting at stadiums. I think plaintiffs' attorneys here would love to take credit for that and say, see, our lawsuit forced MLB to move. I think more likely is this kind of a PR thing with all the injuries last year, kind of highlighting the issue. But it's interesting to note that, you know, a number of stadiums this year, when fans start going out to the ballpark this summer, they're going to notice, if they pay attention, that safety netting behind home plate has been pushed down in a number of ballparks to at least the start of the dugout. Others have gone even a little bit further. It's all really case by case here. And I think that's a lot of the, from MLB's perspective, that's a lot of the problem, is every ballpark is so different that it's hard to have one uniform rule like in the NHL, where all the playing surface is identical, right? Like here, everything is so different. MLB keeps saying we can't just have a one-size-fits-all rule like the plaintiffs' attorneys want. It really has to be team by team, stadium by stadium.
That's part of the difficulty with MLB. You know, part of the charm is each stadium has its own kind of vibe, and so it makes it difficult to come up with a one-size-fits-all rule. So we want people to be safe out there, and looks like both the league and certainly the plaintiffs' attorneys are seeking to find a way to make that happen.
Yeah, it's just a tough thing between, you know, wanting to give the fans that intimacy and access, but still keeping them safe. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out over the next few years.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll watch it. We'll watch your writing at Fangraphs and other places. I don't know if there's anything else you want to say before we finish here.
Yeah, I think that covered it pretty well. Again, happy to do this, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this has been a great talk with Nathaniel Grow, and you can follow him on Twitter. I'll post on the blog post, so you can follow his writing and also follow him on Twitter. So thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend, Lieb Montoya, for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo, as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is at Lieb Montoya in both places. That's at L-I-B Montoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott, and you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, at PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, at SportsLawBiz, or through email at SportsLawBizBlog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.